Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And as much as I hate to say it, we're kind of coming to the end of August. And technically, but just technically, not chronologically, it's the end of summer. Kind of sad. Kids are already back to school, grammar school, high school, college, of course. Labor Day's just around the corner. Nonetheless, we're going to continue to be upbeat, and a little poem written by the very talented Mary Schmeek from the Chicago Tribune about the fact that it's the end of summer, as we know it, finishing up August. It's entitled, August is Summer's Last Call, so enjoy. Mary writes, late August arrives, a farewell to the sun. The summer fun wanes, and how much have you done? Been swimming? Gone fishing? Played hooky enough? Or are you still wasting the days on dumb stuff? Like hours on Facebook, updating your page, or tethered to Twitter, get out of your cage. The cage of bad habits. The cage of routine. Don't waste this late August attached to a screen. Yes, Groupon's in trouble. It gasps and it slumps. And poor old Mark Zuckerberg's down in the dumps. And yes, politicians continue their stunts. Todd Akin, now there's a legitimate dunce. He says he misspoke, but I think he did not. He said what he thinks, and therein lies the rot. But never mind news in these late August days. The news is forever while summer's a phase. It cannot be stored like a vintage fine wine. It cannot be left to grow old on the vine. In August, the summer comes down to the wire. It's use it or lose it, but please don't let it expire. Forget for a moment the Peterson trial. Forget that the world can be tragic and vile. Enough with the creeps and the crazies and loons, the pals and the posers, the jerks and buffoons. No, look at the bees, how they sniff at the flowers. That nectar won't last for too many more hours. Obama and Romney continue to fight. So let them. It's August. Just look at this light. The shadows have shifted and so has the breeze. And look at the change in the late August trees. The leaves are still green. They still rustle and lilt. But look closer still and you'll see a few wilt. And listen. Cicadas, ecstatic with song. Their buzzing's a warning. Our time isn't long. It's almost September. So get on your bike, go sit on the porch, or go out for a hike. The last weeks of August are not made for work. They're made to go sailing, to nap, and to shirk. Go look for some water, a lake or a beach. A pool or a paddle, the juice of a peach. Or make some sweet tea and lie down for a snooze. Get busy relaxing. No time left to lose. Don't say it, you cry. You are just spreading fear. This late August talk makes me cry in my beer. Well, don't worry. We'll always have pleasure in fall. But here, in late August, it's summer's last call. Okay. Still miss it, though. One good way of enjoying the last bit of August and the last bit of summer is the art fair of all art fairs, our good pal Amy Amder, the Port Clinton Art Festival and Taste of Highland Park, the art, the food, the music, the experience for 29 years. The Port Clinton Art Festival has been recognized as one of the most successful juried art festivals in the country. This distinguished outdoor festival offers fine art for more than 260 of the world's most celebrated artists. More than 250,000 art enthusiasts travel from places near and far to visit this acclaimed show annually. Young artists, ages 18 and under, shine in the youth art division of the show, which offers younger artists an opportunity to exhibit and participate in a real art festival. Throughout the weekend, festival goers will have the opportunity to enjoy art activities for kids, including an art scavenger hunt, interactive art demos, and, of course, original artwork offered by master artists from around the world. And kicking off the festival weekend is the 6th annual Taste of Highland Park, which opens Friday and runs in conjunction with the festival throughout the weekend. The Taste features food and libations from many of Highland Park's most notable restaurants. In addition to the tasty fare, festival goers will enjoy a variety of live musical performances from acclaimed bands and performers throughout the weekend. Amy always has a lot of stuff going. Radio Disney streams live from the festival Saturday from 10 to 11:30. The cast from Million Dollar Quartet, the new smash hit musical inspired by the famed recording session that brought together rock and roll icons Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins for the first and only time performs live at the festival from 12 to 12:30 on Saturday. And for the kids, Jeannie B and the Jelly Beans, one of the hottest acts on the kids' music circuit today, promises tons of family fun, and that's Sunday at 10 in the morning. So, if you want to go there, Port Clinton Square, Central, and 1st and 2nd Streets in downtown Highland Park. Any way you can get there, on the train, drive, park, a lot of parking, great food. Founded in 1984, Amder Productions is a nationally acclaimed arts festival production company that organizes and directs a selection of the Midwest's most prestigious juried art festivals. Many of Amder's festivals are rated in Sunshine Artist Magazine's Top 100, with several appearing in the Top 50. For more information, visit Amy's website, Amder Productions, amdurproductions.com, or call 847-926-4300. Had the opportunity, of course, of being out in Arlington Heights for their great art fair, being one of the judges. Very difficult to do because, boy, so many talented, talented people. And this one is the biggest and the best. And it's always fun, and you're going to find something, all different price points. Inexpensive, moderate in price, and some expensive stuff, but certainly all very, very quality and very talented artists involved. Next week, she's going to be up in Milwaukee for the first time, a juried Third Ward Art Festival. Maybe we'll get it, hopefully we can have Amy on the show to talk about that, or maybe some of the other art festivals coming up. She goes all the way into September, and I love to get the word. Always fun chatting with her about that. Kids are back to school. Man, it's really quick. And of course, we have some thoughts and ideas about kids going back to school. But here we are. The Sox swept the Yankees. Can you believe it? Who would have thought that back in spring training that they would do this in August and be in first place by two and a half, whatever it is, and really doing well. Cubs doing just as expected, poorly. And they will continue to do that. You know, we have the summer season coming to an end, but, of course, everybody's looking forward to the fall theater season. Always a lot of great music and theater in the fall, and certainly as we start September and October, I always have a lot of fun chatting with the various artistic and executive directors of the various theater venues in and around the Chicagoland area. Looking forward to chatting with our good pal Tim Rader from the Paramount Theater. Boy, they have a great lineup coming up this year. It'll be fun chatting with him about the great theater he has coming up, given the fact that last year he had such great success with My Fair Lady and Joseph and Chorus Line and Hair. And this year it's going to be just as successful. Little essay written by a very talented writer, Mr. Jack Spadafora, about August, and would love to share that with you because we are dwindling fast. It's entitled Savor the Last Full Month of Summer. Jack writes, August is mystical. For many it's too hot, for some too wet, that's certainly not our problem, for others too long. And yet the way I feel is that August is the great divide between what has been and what is about to come. The succulent days of green spring and red summer are slipping through our fingers. Beckoning just up ahead are the crunchy days of orange autumn and white winter. But before we start tucking away the bathing suits and taking out the school books, Gad kind of gives us this lyrical pause. Now, a great many consider it the appropriate time to hurry off on some before-it's-too-late trip. To pack, to travel, to explore. The record shows that most young families and psychiatrists take August vacations. Okay, what's the connection there? I'm not sure. Most young families might need psychiatrists. On the other hand, the reputed dog days of summer might actually represent the best time to remain right where we are. Well, why? Because something extraordinary is taking place right where we are. Dawns sneak up on us like whispers splashed across a palette of purples and ambers. Noon suns burn at their hottest and highest. Squadrons of sparrows and starlings whoosh overhead. Platoons of tiny children giggle across lawns or insist on just one more lemonade stand. Young mothers exchange news on park and beach benches. On-the-move executives slip off jackets to finger mustardy hot dogs before rushing back to close another deal. Fruits are at their fattest. A million cicadas sing their August choruses. A billion stars white fire the night sky. The entire drama plays out all around us, right here. Whenever we take the time to look, and we should. So, no. August is not simply to be endured or escaped. It is to be savored and held as close as a catechism. For us Catholics, we can understand that. A Baltimore catechism, by the way. But I'm dating myself, I should say. And very, very vivid words by Jack Spadafore, a very talented man. Dawns sneak up on us like whispers splashed across a palette of purples and ambers. Noon suns burn at their hottest and highest. Squadrons of sparrows and starlings whoosh overhead. Very true. Very interesting words. Interesting statistic here. The Lion King nears its Broadway milestone. The Lion King is set to roar past A Chorus Line to become the fifth longest-running show in Broadway history. Interesting. The Disney musical, directed by Julie Taymor, has been playing for 14 years and 9 months. Almost 15 years it's been playing. It opened at the New Amsterdam Theater in New York in November 1997. It transferred to the Minskoff Theater in 2006, where it continues to run. A Chorus Line ran on Broadway from July 25th, 75 to April 28th, 1990. It ran at the Public Theater in New York before the transferring to Uptown. Now, last, what is the longest-running show in Broadway history? Well, of course, Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera is the longest-running show in Broadway history at 22 years and counting. It's still running, and it's still great. Cats is second, another great, great musical. Les Miserables and Chicago round out the top four. So it's Phantom of the Opera, Cats, Les Miserables, and Chicago, with Lion King coming up and Chorus Line after that. This year, The Lion King beat another Broadway record, surpassing Phantom as the all-time box office champion. But the record came with a caveat. The Disney musical has benefited from higher ticket prices than Phantom. Well, there you go. Taymor's most recent Broadway effort, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, has been a somewhat less joyous experience. And certainly hasn't, nor will it run, as long as any of the other ones have. But interesting, the Phantom is the longest running, with Cats, Les Miserables, and Chicago, and now Lion King and Chorus Line. All great musicals. And Les Miserables come back to Chicago, which is terrific. It'll be with the Broadway in Chicago series, and looking forward to that. I'm talking to one of our friends over at Margie Korshak, Amanda Meyer, and Lucy and Desi, the musical, is coming in September, so we're looking forward to having the actress who portrays Lucy and the actor who portrays Desi on the show, reminiscing all those great Lucy shows that we listened to and watched over the years. Very interesting. Well, since it's still summer and we're not going to give up on it yet, we're going to play a little great Brazilian music by Astrid Gilberto. Of course, she was married to João Gilberto, one of Bossa Nova's originating stylists in the early 1960s, Brazilian music became very, very popular with its cooling melodies, its hot hip style, immigrated from Rio. And Astrid Gilberto, João's wife, singing suggested and evoked a feeling of innocence and shyness and coyness and even vulnerability. Love has been a key. Indeed, love is Gilberto's favorite, if not her only subject. Sensually and philosophically, the song lyrics she favors gives her plenty of room to flirt, sigh, whisper, pout, hug, kiss, caress, question, care, and conquer. So we're going to be featuring her CD, Astrid for Lovers, and we're going to go with a great song written by Burton Lane and Skip Harburg. Beautiful, beautiful love song entitled Look to the Rainbow. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Born, said my father, said he, of an elegant legacy waiting for thee. 'Tis a rhyme for your lips and a song for your heart to sing it whenever the world falls apart. The rainbow following over the hills and the stream. Look, look, look to the rainbow. Follow the fellow who follows a dream.
Kevin Moore Show. Get grooving to the best of the 60s and 70s with the Happy Together Tour at Aurora's Paramount Theater, August 24th. Singing the grooviest classic rock and pop tunes from the 60s and 70s, the Happy Together Tour will rock the stage on Friday, August 24th at the Paramount Theater, 23 East Galena Boulevard in downtown Aurora. The Happy Together Tour, including performances by the Turtles featuring Flo and Eddie, the Buckinghams, Gary Puckett and the Union Gap, the Grassroots, and Mickey Dolenz, brings together musicians and bands that were driving forces in the 60s and 70s, amassing gold albums, platinum albums, number one singles, and touring the world while playing sold-out shows. Who thought it could get any better? Mickey Dolenz, Gary Puckett. Wow, it's 42 Sydneys, and then the regular guys, the Buckinghams, Grassroots, and the Turtles. Seriously, it does get better. This looks like the best year yet. Hope everyone makes it out, says Mark Volman from the Turtles. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning musician known for such worldwide hits as Happy Together, It Ain't Me, Babe, and You, Baby. Nationally renowned vocalist who has appeared and worked with John Lennon, Bruce Springsteen, Jefferson Airplane, and Frank Zappa, to name but a very few. A person sincerely dedicated in sharing his talents with others, as is evidenced in his work with the students at Belmont University, the Flow in Flo and Eddie, and the founder of one of America's great rock bands, the Turtles, now starring the Happy Together Tour, Friday, August 24th at 8 at the Paramount Theater in Aurora, Mr. Mark Volman. Mark, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. How you doing, buddy? Well, I know you're off to another great show, and you're traveling all over the place. 42 cities, boy, you got to be a busy guy.
Well, this has been a really exceptional summer. We're very excited to see the success of our tour. The last 3 years have been growing each year, and this, of course, is our largest tour this year and one of the best. This is a great package, so... Great to see.
You know, Mark, you have to, is this the second tour you had or the third tour you've been doing?
Well, with Happy Together, this is our third summer.
Okay.
So I think one of the great things is it gives the opportunity to people who have great memories of those great songs from that era, give them a chance to come out and experience it live.
You know, Mark, I don't think there's any question about that. I still get a kick out of it. I know a lot of people do. And certainly, as I said, is evidence in watching some of the PBS specials. You just love to recapture what you were doing, who you're with, who you had fallen in love with, what those songs represented as you listen to them, whether it's seeing you guys or whether it's watching the television. And it's just a lot of fun.
Well, I think also you left out a very important part of that, which is how goofy the bands were dressed. those are kind of fun old videos to look back on, because it's pretty amazing to me the way some of us look.
Well, since you've been doing it 40 or 50 years, you must have had fun doing it, and you continue to have fun doing it.
Well, I think, I don't think any one of these groups would just this just because they can. I think you've got to really still enjoy it. The travel is really, that's the hardest part, Kevin. We do sometimes 6 to 8 hours after a show to get to the next city. I think the hardest part for us is just keeping our energy up on a night-to-night basis, because it is a great show. There's so many great songs. And I think the nice thing about it, it has been put together as a production with a lot of visuals of some of those videos that we did grow up with. And I think it's nice being able to see the band live, the band on video, and the production runs much like a Broadway show, in as much as we use one house band to back up all the songs and add a few musicians from the original groups. And it really helps.
Had the opportunity of having Carl Giammarisi on last week, and we were chatting and had a nice chat. And certainly, you guys make it look effortless, but it's very structured and it's very prepared.
Yeah, we tried to do it, put the show together. We actually went into production about 3 days in a rehearsal hall, utilizing all of the musicians and putting together the lights and sound and the visuals. We wanted the show to not be like an old rock show, because we didn't want there to have to be, we didn't want the audience having to sit there through 10 or 15 or 20 minutes of set changes. And that's one of the things that I think we hear. the way through the end of the show, and there's not a lot of filigree in terms of changing the drums or moving new amps into place. That's been a really, really positive move to the tour.
You know, Mark, one other thing I want to bring up, too, is the fact that, you know, you guys spend a little time afterwards getting to meet the audience and meet your fans and so forth, sign autographs, talk with them a little bit. It makes a big difference because it puts them in a little more proximity and gives a little more visceral feeling as to what you're doing out there.
Well, I know in our summer tours and, you know, our tours during years, that's true. That's one of those things. It gets a little bit harder with this tour because of the amount of, I want to say, principal artists. It's a little bit easier when we're out doing shows on our own, but we've tried very hard to make that work. We do hold some meet and greet from night to night, but we have to kind of curb the amount of people because you have great, you know, signature people. I mean, Nikki Dolan is a part of music history. I think that when you have somebody, you know, of that stature, Nikki is, you know, we can consider Nikki our headliner.
Mm-hmm.
And when Howard and I envisioned this tour, the Turtles are the last part of the evening, but we certainly don't look at ourselves as headliners. We look at Nikki and Gary, and we certainly put a capper on the evening. And one of the nice things is we have put together a finale where we all join in at the end. And I think there's something nice about how we put together the whole show.
You know, I had the opportunity of having Mike Love and Bruce Johnson from the Beach Boys on a while back and chatting with them, and I kind of talked about what they were doing and so forth. We talked about summer vacation, and Mike said to me, he said, "Kev, you know, I haven't had a summer vacation in 40 years because they're always working during the summer. Everybody wants to see the Beach Boys in the summer. That's what you guys are up to now."
Well, that was our hope, was to establish a show that was going to become perennially something the audience could look forward to, and Happy Together allows us to pull together five artists from that era that are really, the artists who really care about, you know, being out there and performing, and that's one of the really bright spots. And not, you know, not to take anything away from the Boys, they're one of the great musical histories. They're an act we grew up with in Southern California. We only went to school about 3 miles apart from each other. And
really?
Played lots of shows together, even back in our high school. They do a really excellent job, and they've represented, I think, American popular music on an exceptional.
Well, you know, you've worked with such great great stars, as I mentioned in the introduction. You've worked with Ringo, you've worked with John Lennon, you've worked with Springsteen and Queen and Alice Cooper and the Jefferson Airplane. What are some of the seminal moments or the seminal moment you had when you were working people that, you know, you saw when you were growing up and said, geez, now I'm working with these people? I used to look up to them?
Well, Kevin, honestly, I know this sounds goofy, but I think couldn't meet two bigger groupies than Howard and I. We truly are fans of popular music. I think some of the moments that I look at what we've been given the opportunity to be a part of, and getting a chance and looking at the artists who we work with who are no longer here.
Yeah,
that's something that we really think about a lot. One more driving on these tours. I mean, we got to make records, almost five albums with Mark Bolan in a band called T-Rex. We did Keith Moon's record, the Two Sides of the Moon, where we worked on that album 1 year with Keith. We worked with Frank Zappa we worked with Joey Ramone, and all of those artists, along with a few others, are no longer here.
Yeah.
I think we have such great memories of, you know, those things. I guess if you wanted to put a capper on and say, what was up to now, the one moment that stands out was last October, Howard and I participated in an event at Carnegie Hall.
Oh, boy.
Where we sang on stage with U2, Lou Reed, Laurie Anderson, Courtney Love, just a magnificent show, Chloe Webb, Scarlett Johansson. It was a birthday party that was put on, and all of the seats were sold, and all the money raised was for the Bono's Red Foundation.
Wow, that's great.
Getting to be on the Carnegie Hall stage and singing with just all these phenomenal artists it was remarkable to me that many of them considered us their seminal moment. So kind of fun to have Bono tell you that he grew up listening to our records, the records we made, especially with T-Rex, were very influential on YouTube. And it was great. We got to work with them about 30 years ago when we traveled overseas. We did several television shows together in Sweden and Luxembourg and Holland, and actually became friends before they actually attacked us in the United States. They had just released their first single. And you know, when you get involved in a project like that and are able to raise money for such a great, great thing, it all really kind of makes you realize that something you do is worth a lot more than just that gold record.
Well, I think you're very humble in those words, because that's very true. There's an old saying, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. That being involved in that group, but also, as I mentioned in the introduction, Mark, involved with the kids from Belmont University. That's a great thrill for them. That was great. Tell our listeners what that's all about.
Well, in my midlife crisis, it started about 1994. I sort of felt that I was up to the challenge of going back to college. I started college at Loyola Marymount University in 1994.
Well, I'm a Loyola guy from Chicago, so that's good. The Jesuits taught us both.
Yeah, there you go. And, I went to Loyola for 4 years and graduated with a major in communication and a minor in English. And then I stayed and finished a master's in fine art. And while I was going for my master's,
Yeah, I know we lost you a little bit because you're traveling from one gig to the next. You're going out to Louisville. But you had lost you when we were talking about Mark when you were at graduate school at Loyola Marymount.
Yeah, so they asked me to put together a class on the business of music. And while going for my graduate studies, I was actually teaching music business classes at the same time. I ended up teaching at Loyola and yet another school in Los Angeles for almost 7 years.
Oh.
My wife and I moved from the West Coast to Nashville, Tennessee. When we moved there, one of the professors was aware of my educational business I was in and asked me if I would come to Belmont University and help him. He was in need of a substitute for himself, and I substituted for him in 2003, and then I was offered a full-time position in the largest music business school in the United States, which is at Belmont University.
Wow. And,
I've been teaching music business since the start of my 8th year. And one of the interesting things, Kevin, you probably would like to hear is, as a summer school course, we brought 10 students
That's cool. I must have loved that.
And they worked selling merchandise and setting up and mixing sound and being stage managers and actually taking on every day a different job of the tour. And they were a part of classrooms that we held every day in different cities. And they ended up with us doing 17 shows in 20 days. And I had to go home. And the way the tour ran, I was able to get grades for them all as part of their studies of undergraduate diploma.
What a great idea. Those kids must have just absolutely loved that, Mark. And what an opportunity for them to get exposed to that kind of course, lifestyle, music, but the business side of the business also.
I think there is a certain part of touring that still remains very romantic. Every time I tell people that I'm out touring, it's like, oh, what fun. And one of the things that people don't really realize is that, especially with the Happy Together Tour, we bring about 300 years of touring experience. And, there probably isn't a state or country that these five acts haven't worked in the past 50 years, honestly. And I know I've known Mickey Dolan and I, our children went to the same grammar school and then junior high schools together, and we worked, Mickey and I played softball for charity with Alice Cooper and Albert Brooks and the Hudson Brothers, and so my relationship with Mickey is a lot different than just the monkeys and the turtles.
Sure.
We have a lot of history with this friend putting together a Halloween event for our children at the local school. So it's great to be able to be on a tour at this time in all of our lives, and I think each one of us looks at this as a really fantastic opportunity to, come back and be with our fans. And most touring is so hard on an artist in terms of the economics, and you just can't do as many cities as this tour can reach because of the volume of songs and the success. We're able to get out to 42 cities during the summer. It's been quite a revelation.
Well, I know you're having fun because everybody that's watching is having fun, and we thank you for sharing your unique talents and everybody in the tour. It's been just great, Mark. The Turtles, Happy Together, hit number one on the charts in 1967, displacing the Beatles' Penny Lane. A little bit of trivia there, and remains a staple on classic rock radio to this day. Although their biggest hit and signature song, it's just one of their 9 top 40 hits, which includes such popular songs as She'd Rather Be With Me, Eleanor, You Showed Me, and It Ain't Me, Babe. In 2009, a new Turtles compilation CD was released titled Save the Turtles, the Turtles' Greatest Hits, which was issued on their own Flo-Ed Co. label. In all, the band has sold more than 60 million albums worldwide to date. For more information, visit theturtles.com. Singing the grooviest classic rock and pop tunes from the 60s and 70s, the Happy Together Tour will rock the stage on Friday, August 24th at 8 at the Paramount Theater, 23 East Galena Boulevard in downtown Aurora. On the line with us right now is Flo of the Flo and Eddie the Turtles, our good pal Mark Volman. Mark, I really appreciate you taking a little time and chatting.
Kevin, I was glad you came back because I wanted to thank you, and I wanted you to kind of realize that, like vinyl records, AM radio is such a mainstay in the history of radio and popular music. So much of our success is tied to the great radio that they have. And I'm so glad that I got this chance to come over and spend some time with you. I think your fans who appreciate what you bring to the radio, they also realize that this is hopefully something that can remain a part of our American culture. AM is just a tremendous, tremendous radio, and the fact that we can get together like this, I just really appreciate the time you've given me to just remind the fans that the show
Well, very kind words, and certainly it's been an honor and pleasure to have you. And drive safely, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Well, thank you, and thank you, everybody, and we'll see you again. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Vollman, Flo and Eddie, of course, the Turtles, and the Happy Together Tour, Friday, August 24th at 8 at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. For information, 630-896-6666. We're going to go back to Astrid Gilberto, her song, The Shadow of Your Smile. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
The shadow of your smile when you are gone will color all my dreams.
Johnny Mandel's great song, The Shadow of Your Smile, from the movie The Sandpiper with Astrid Gilberto. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show with two PBS concert specials and its new self-titled Disney Pearl debut album. Nathan Pacheco is headlining a North American tour, which will stop in Chicago at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph, on Tuesday, November 13th. The PBS special Introducing Nathan Pacheco, live in concert, airs August 23rd on WTTW in Chicago. Like Andrea Bocelli and Josh Groban before him, Nathan Pacheco mastered the art of pop classical crossover. The new album, produced by Leo Z, showcases the passionate vocals Pacheco first revealed with the 2009 Voices Project. With Avatar set as the premier focus track, the new album arrives in stores September 18th. With his technique, Pacheco could go toe-to-toe with the finest operatic tenors. But for Nathan, technique is, well, just a technicality, a tool for conveying emotion. In everything he sings, from Puccini to Leonard Cohen, feeling is all that counts. His new album showcases Nathan's remarkable versatility. Over the 12 tracks, he sings in four languages and multiple genres, from pop to folk to opera. Few voices can pull off such a feat, but Nathan makes it look easy and sound beautiful. All my efforts to master technique are for the sole purpose of connecting with people, he says. That's what I go for every time. The more control I have, the more freedom I have to express what I feel. And in line with us right now is the award-winning vocalist whose talents cross over and span numerous musical dynamics and genres, multilingual singer who is adept at comfortable singing pop, rock, classical, or opera, songwriter and composer, and one of the hottest and most talented vocalists in the entertainment world today, who will be featured in the PBS special Introducing Nathan Pacheco, live in concert, which airs Thursday, August 23rd, and then be back in Chicago November 13th in concert at Harris Theater for Music and Dance in Millennium Park. On the line with us right now is Nathan Pacheco. Nathan, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, my goodness, that was quite the introduction. I got to take you everywhere with me.
I'd be happy to. Let's go to Rome first, though. I'd like to do that. It's great to have you in Chicago. Your first time in Chicago?
No, I've been here a few times, and every time I come here, you guys treat me so kindly. So it's been quite the week. I sang at the White Sox game last night.
Beautiful.
National anthem, and been on a few TV shows, so it's been a fun week so far.
Well, you got to do that more often because we beat the Yankees and swept them last night, so you got to come sing more for us.
I wish I could say, hey, maybe I'm good luck, but I, you know, that was all the socks. I had nothing to do with it.
Well, it's great to have you. It's great to chat with you. And, Keith, congratulations on your great success. It's been fast here, kiddo.
Hey, well, thank you. It's been a fun journey the past few years, and just to see things kind of coming together little by little over the past several months, I'm just enjoying the ride.
Well, I know you're coming back in November, but you got to be excited, of course, for the PBS special. Tell us a little bit about that, Nathan.
Yeah, that's actually tonight at 7:30. Oh. I'll be hopping over there in a couple hours. And so on WTTW, my first PBS special will be aired, my solo PBS special, that is. And so it's a lot of fun.
You're so adept at singing all different types of music. You know, I noticed one thing. If somebody was to come to me, Nathan, and you may or may not agree with this, and say, I would like one area which would introduce me to opera, my suggestion would be to listen to Nessun Dorma, Let No One Sleep, of course, from Turandot. And you sing it just wonderfully, and I just love it.
Thank you. That is a daunting song to sing, but probably one of the most thrilling songs to sing for a live audience, because I think because it's such a challenging song to sing, there's so much emotion when you sing it, but also it's just such a beautiful melody. Puccini, he certainly wrote a masterpiece when he wrote this song, and I think people, even people that don't like opera, they connect with this song because it just has this simple and triumphant melody that people kind of resonate with. And so it's a song that I had to snatch for my debut album, and it's perhaps one of my favorite songs to sing in live shows.
Is it difficult, Nathan, to go from an operatic aria to a pop music song, let's say like something like Now We Are Free from the movie Gladiator, or to sing something that Leonard Cohen writes? How do you kind of readjust your thinking, or would you say clear the mechanism to go to the next song?
Sure. And that's a good question, because it's certainly been a work in progress for me. I'm still working at it. But one of the things that I've tried to do is to really be able to come off the tenor high notes and then to be able to jump into kind of a folk or pop style of singing. And when you can do it right, and I don't claim to always do it right, but I am trying, but when I do it right, I feel like there's such an ability to connect with people because, you know, you give them both extremes. You sing the high notes in Nessun Dorma, and then you start off as if you were whispering to them when you start singing, say, Hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of both extremes, I think, kind of create a great atmosphere for a good show.
You know, you have been compared to a lot of great singers, Andrea Bocelli, as I said originally, Josh Groban. I don't know if that fatigues you or not, but of course that's a great compliment. I'm sure you see it as that.
I'll take it.
Sure, sure. Frank Sinatra, I don't know, well, Tony Bennett, maybe, I don't know. But when you were honing your craft, and you are still honing your craft day in and day out, everything is a dynamic, everything's a work in progress. Who did you look up to? Who did you look to see, boy, I like the way his style is, or I like, I'm sure it's a melting pot or a melding of a lot of different people.
Sure. Well, when it comes to operatic singers, I have always loved Pavarotti's recordings, and
mm-hmm.
I still do. The way that he was able to sing the high notes, in my opinion, I think is unmatched. I also loved Mario Lanza with...
Oh, sure, right, yeah.
...the crossover singer in his day. But then I love Simon and Garfunkel. I love listening to their recordings,
sure.
And I love that kind of folk style with the guitar picking and kind of the cool harmonies. And so I have quite the interesting blend on my iTunes playlist, but I think that has helped me in my artistic development because I like to bring in different genres when different songs come along.
Well, we become a part of everything we meet or hear or whatever, and I imagine you absorb a lot of that, and from that kind of develop a style, which is a very unique style. Where would you like to go? Do you want to continue to travel the world and sing and entertain and so forth?
Yeah, if I could just keep doing this, I would be set. Because I love my job. I love singing. I love writing music. I love traveling. And I really have this opportunity to do all these things with my job right now. So I'm hoping that things continue to move forward, that I continue to have the chance to sing for people all over and continue to have the chance to write new music, to record. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed.
You know, one thing I want to bring out, I know this is going to embarrass you a little bit, but I think that certainly people should know that having, of course, studied at BYU, part of your mission, of course, is to sincerely helping other people. And you took a little time off from your career and went down to Brazil, and which is the ancestral home of your grandpa, and certainly helped out a little bit there. Tell us a little bit about that trip.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my grandfather was from Curitiba, Brazil, just south of São Paulo, but I had never been to Brazil until that time in my life, and I made the personal decision to kind of take a couple years off school and go do missionary service down there, and it was without question a life-changing experience for me, where I just kind of, instead of kind of selfishly pursuing my desires to kind of chase my dreams, it kind of helped open my eyes to the conditions of people in the slums down there, in the favelas, and helped me kind of realize how fortunate we are here in the States. And it helped me just kind of try to put other people's needs in front of my own and just kind of go out. And quite frankly, I actually did a lot of singing down there. I realized that many times there wasn't much I could do to help people too much, but I could at least every now and then lift their spirits by singing them a few songs and just kind of taking their mind off their troubles. And so it was certainly an unforgettable experience for me, one that I continue to look back on with fond memories. And I definitely learned lessons there that I'll always kind of try to apply in my life.
Well, there's an old saying, I've used it before, we make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. And that's certainly reflective of the time you spent kind of living that down in Brazil and helping some people out. Was your mom and dad, were they involved in music when you were young?
Yeah, in fact, my mom taught piano out of the home. She still does. And my dad played the cello. He kind of stopped doing that because he had to raise 7 kids.
Okay.
I'm from a big family. But my mom taught piano out of the home, and so I was always exposed to music. And my mom kind of cultivated this appreciation within all of us kids to get involved with music, whether we were going to pursue it or not. She kind of cultivated within us this desire to be able to be musical. And some of us decided to go for it, and some of us didn't. But I was one of those that really found such a connection with music and really decided to go for it. And I'm glad that I did, because, like I said earlier, I really love what I'm doing.
Lucky for us. Now, you were a round baller when you were in school, though. You enjoyed playing basketball, right?
Absolutely. That certainly was my passion. And I must say that I met Scottie Pippen last night at the White House.
Oh, did you? Yeah, he threw out the first ball, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. I had to be an annoying fan and say, hey, can I get a picture with you? Because he was one of the players that I idolized back in the day. It was in the glory days of him and Michael Jordan, and I followed them nonstop and had dreams of being in the NBA. Of course, that was never going to happen, but it was fun to dream about it back in the day. And so it was neat to meet him.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll be talking to the Michael Jordan of music here not too shortly here. That's the truth. All I want you to do is promise me one thing now. When you get to the status of Andrea Bocelli and you're charging $950 for a ticket, remember that you were on our show, would you please?
Absolutely. I can't believe how expensive those tickets are. I actually just found out about that a couple months ago, and I didn't realize how much it costs to go to one of his concerts.
Holy cats. Jeez. With 100,000 tickets sold, that's not too bad.
I know.
Having mastered the technique of singing long ago, Nathan Pacheco could go toe-to-toe with the finest operatic tenors. But for Nathan, technique is, well, just a technicality, a tool for conveying emotion. In everything he sings, from Puccini to Leonard Cohen, feeling is all that counts. After making waves with the Voices Project in 2009, this rising vocal superstar now takes the spotlight with his self-titled debut Disney Pearl album. And, of course, August 23rd on WTTW, introducing Nathan Pacheco live in concert. And luckily for us, he'll be back on November 13th at the Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph Street, and have a terrific time enjoying him. A pleasure, Nathan, to have you on the show. I'm glad you're enjoying Chicago, and I'm going to ask you one thing. Come back more often, will you please?
No, I absolutely will. You guys are too good to me, so thank you.
I'm going to give one more time a phone number for Harris Theater, 312-334-7777. A pleasure. Enjoy your time here, my pal, and safe travels.
Hey, thanks again, Kevin.
Thank you, Nathan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Nathan Pacheco, one of the young talents in entertainment today. Of course, November 13th at Harris Theater for Music and Dance, 205 East Randolph. Just terrific. And his PBS special, Introducing Nathan Pacheco, live in concert, airing on WTTW in Chicago. Just a very talented man, very friendly young man, isn't he? And certainly enjoyable talking with him. As I said before, he had a couple tips for our freshmen in high school. Not college, freshmen in high school as they start new high school. We have some friends doing that. And just a couple thoughts. Number one, learn to laugh at yourself. It makes it less likely that others will do so. Get in the habit of reading for pleasure. You'll have a lot of homework, but reading for pleasure is very enjoyable. It's a nearly effortless way of learning how to write well. I think that's very true. You're going to have your studies, you're going to have your math and your history and so forth, but as a diversion, have a fiction book or something you're going to read just for recreational reading. Three, remember that it's a sign of maturity, not weakness, to ask for help when you need it. You're not alone on this journey. It's a sign of maturity, not weakness, to ask for help. And it's in life in general. Don't limit yourself to electives, extracurricular activities, and social circles that you know you like. Take chances. Leave your comfort zone. Be open to surprises. That's how you learn. And high school is when you start to figure out whom you want to be as an adult. So don't always go along with the crowd. Assert yourself. And to an extent. And finally, don't buy locker insurance or an elevator pass. Somebody will be wanting to sell you that. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank one of the great icons of rock and roll and one of the great groups, The Turtles, Flo and Eddie, Mark Volman. What a delight chatting with him. I know it was a little difficult because he kind of kept going in and out. He was on his cell phone, but he was traveling to one of his 42-city tour stops in Louisville. And he's going to be at the Paramount Theater Friday, August 24th at 8 o'clock. And the Happy Together Tour with some very, very talented men. Of course, Carol G. Morisi of the Buckinghams and Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees and Gary Puckett of the Union Gap and the Turtles. Should be a great, great evening. So if you have an opportunity, make sure you stop by for information, 630-896-6666. And Nathan Pacheco, very delightful young man to chat with. His PBS special, Introducing Nathan Pacheco, live in concert on WTTW. And then he'll be back in November, November 13th, in fact, in concert at Harris Theater for Music and Dance in Millennium Park. Should be a lot of fun. For information, 312-334-7777. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and, if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes, I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try
with every day to make it better as it grows. Any luck, then I suppose the music